Thank you, Rav Ashur. Morning, everyone. Thank you for coming. Just last week, the Star K of Baltimore issued a statement in which they write that Rav Heineman has now directed all establishments under the Star K supervision to refrain from using any fish deemed problematic by the fish list. The fish list can be accessed on the website of Rav Gershon Bess's Shlita's Shul in Los Angeles, kehilasyakov.org. If you log on, you will find davening times and fish list. Links for both. And the fish list prohibits, among others, all types of wild salmon, certain types of flounder, all sole, and a number of other fish, sable, and much longer list of fish than I can remember by heart, but according to Star K now, at present, all of those fish are off limits for any food establishments under the supervision, even if the fish have hashgacha on it, that's irrelevant, until the Star K establishes inspection procedures for these fish, none of their food establishments can use these fish anymore. And this is, as you have undoubtedly heard by now, is an issue that has been discussed sometimes with a bit of vociferous disagreement over the past year plus, about a little over a year ago, a number of Gedolim in Eretz Yisrael, Rav Eliashiv Shlita, Rav Shmuel Vosner Shlita, signed a statement prohibiting consumption of the fish on the forbidden fish list. One of the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael, who has been very much behind this push to assa these fish, Rav Moshe Mordechai Karp of Kiryat Sefer, recently published a number of months ago an article in the Or Yisrael Halacha Journal where he step by step explains why he feels that these fish are forbidden. Very, very convincing article if you read it. And it was in response to an earlier article that had argued leheter for these fish. And so hashgach agencies now are, you know, scrambling around the world trying to figure out what to do in this regard. Some reports online claim that the Badatz in Eretz Yisrael has adopted a stringent approach. Just yesterday, someone in my shul who has a brother who is living in Eretz Yisrael knows someone who works at the Badatz, and it's not true. They're still investigating. I spoke to the Yoshev Rosh of the COR, the largest Canadian Hashgacha, on Friday, and he told me that Hagorna of Shlomo Miller Shlita, the Rosh Kol of the Kol of Rechem in Toronto, one of the most prominent poskim in Toronto, who the COR often consults with regard to halachic shailas, contrary to reports on the web, Rav Miller feels that the worms in the fish are problematic. He's in the process of writing a tshuva on the issue. The COR themselves, they're still investigating the facts, whether there is, you know, as much of a frequency of occurrence as people think there is in these fish. And so a lot of these hashgacha agencies are still scrambling, trying to figure out what to do, trying to decide what to do, even trying to determine what the facts are before they can paskin the halacha. So I'd like to share with you this morning just some of the issues, some of the facts, and it's a very, very fascinating discussion, especially since, according to some, it might be a conflict between Torah and science, so to speak. I say according to some, not everyone thinks it's a conflict, that's why there's a question mark in the title, but we'll try to see what we can just to get a basic overview of the issues at hand. Beginning of the handout, there's a little snippet here that I cut and paste from Wikipedia. Forgive my inability to find a more scholarly source, but this was easily accessible. Much of the discussion focuses on the Anisaki parasite, which is a little worm that poskim today are worried appears in many of the fish in question. If you read the brief synopsis here, this Anisaki parasite has a life cycle in which its eggs are hatched in the seawater. Larvae then, which emerge from the eggs, are eaten by crustaceans. The crustacean, which has eaten this larva, this Anisaki larva, is then consumed by a larger fish. And as far as kashrus is concerned, the problem begins when the larger fish, perhaps a salmon, is then caught by a fisherman and then is gutted and sent into the fish market for consumption. So that's where the kashrus problem begins. You have this larger fish, this salmon, this cod, this sable, this flounder, sole, whatever it may be, which has consumed this larva, this Anasaki larva that it found in this, which, that was actually consumed first by a crustacean, which was then consumed by this salmon. And now the question is, does this larva remain in the salmon? That's the halachic concern. Now, I just point out that this is not just a halachic issue, this is a very serious health issue as well. Health issue because if a person eats raw fish, which is infested by this parasite, it can create very serious digestive problems, nausea, vomiting, severe abdominal pain. And this is a disease that is more common, according to this website, in countries that consume raw fish. Japan, sushi is one that's mentioned. The Netherlands is another country that's mentioned. So it's not just a halachic issue, it's a health issue as well. Now, as far as the health issue goes, so regulatory bodies in the U.S. and Britain require that you flash freeze your fish before you market it. That kills the larva. Okay, so you can deal with it from a health perspective. But the question is, from a halachic perspective, whether the fish has been flash frozen or not, if you have larva in the fish, it still might be problematic. That's the question. So what is the halachic issue that's at the core of the discussion here? What is it all about? Look in the first source where this all begins, Gemara in Chulin on Daf Samach Zayin Amid Beis. The Gemara tells us the following. The Gemara says, Omer Rav Sheshes, Breid Rav Idi, Rav Sheshes, son of Rav Idi, said, Kukiani Asiri, the Kukiani worm is forbidden to consume. My timer, why is that? My alma asu, because it comes from the outside of the fish. So if we're talking about, it's actually a machlokas, Rishonim, how to learn the sugya, are we discussing animal meat that you're eating? Are we discussing a fish that you're eating? But whether it's an animal we're discussing, which is Rashi's approach to the Gemara, whether it's a fish we're discussing, which is Tosis' approach to the Gemara, either way, the concept is the same. Rav Sheshes Breid Rav Idi says this kukiani worm, when found in this fish that you're consuming, is forbidden to eat because it comes from the outside. Maskef Rav Ashi, so Rav Ashi asks, Ime alma asu, if it comes from the outside, meaning if it was consumed by mouth, by the fish, l'shtakhu derach besarei, it should be excreted from the fish with the rest of the food that the fish eats and then rids itself of the waste product. Okay, that's the first stage in the Gemara. What do you glean from this quick exchange in the Gemara? The question in the Gemara is simply whether this kukiani worm can be assumed to come from the outside, in which case it's forbidden, or whether we assume that it didn't come from the outside, because if it would have come from the outside, it would have gone the way of the rest of the food. It would not remain in the fish. Now, the question in the Gemara essentially is, do we assume it comes from the outside or not? But everybody clearly agrees that if you can determine that this worm comes from the outside, the fish swallowed it from the outside water environment, then that worm would be forbidden. We then go to the next source, the next stage in the Gemara. Source number two. The Gemara says, Ika de Amri, some say, Amar Rav Shisha Breid de Rav Idi, Rav Shisha Breid de Rav Idi says, Kukiani Sharu. No, the worm, this Kukiani worm, is permissible to consume. My time of why is it permissible to eat this worm? Not that you would want to if you saw it. Check out Google Images. There are some very unappetizing pictures of this worm in the fish. I initially had them on the handout, and I decided against it because that would bias you against this whole issue to begin with. That's why I chose this more power of picture here of a 1 centimeter wide Anasaki larva against a black background. So you don't see it in your food, per se. But if you're interested, it's there. Google Images, you can check it out. Yet the Gemara says, according to the second lashon in the Gemara, Kukiani Sharu, this Kukiani worm is permissible. Why? My time of why is it permissible? And here's a very important phrase. Mine Gavli. because it grows from the fish itself. Amar Rav Ashi says, Pshita, it's obvious that that's correct. Zi'ime alma ka'asu, because if it came from the outside, l'shtakhu derech beisarei. Once again, it should have gone the way of the rest of the food waste product. It would go in through the mouth, through the digestion system, and out with the waste from the fish's body. So once again, you see from the Gemara that the discussion is all focused on where does this worm come from? If it comes from the outside, from the water on the outside, it's forbidden. If it comes from the inside, it's permissible. But here the Gemara gives us an additional piece of information. Why or how would I assume it comes from the inside? Where's it coming from? So the Gemara says, Minei Gavli. It grows from the fish itself. Rashi in source number 3 explains, what does that mean? Minei Gavli. And Rashi again, following his opinion, which I alluded to earlier, assumes the Gemara is talking about parasites found in a steak of an animal, not in the flesh of a fish, but the same idea would apply to fish, according to Tosfos. Rashi says, Lashon Gavli. Gavli is a word that means it grows, it's nurtured. Min ha-behema atzma hein gedelin, that this worm grows from the fish or from the animal itself. V'lav sheretz ha'aretz ninhu. If we assume it grows, it nurtures itself from the flesh of the animal itself, it's not classified as sheretz ha'aretz. Sheretz ha'aretz means it comes from the outside. It crawled on the ground, it was eaten by an animal, and now still is usher as sheretz ha'aretz. But if it grows from the animal itself, it never became forbidden under the category of sheretz ha'aretz. Or when it comes to fish, if the worm found in the flesh of the fish is assumed minei gavli, to grow from the flesh of the fish itself, then it's not considered sheretz hamayim. If it came from the outside, then it is sheretz hamayim, then you have a number of isurei de'oraisa, very serious isurim which you want to avoid. Getting there. Hang on. We're coming. You mean spontaneous generation. Immaculate conception is a bit of a different issue. Okay. We're getting there. Okay. How does the Gemara conclude? So the Gemara tells us in source number 4, V'hilchasa, the halacha is, kukiyani asiri. That these kukiyani worms that we've been debating, are they me'alma ka'asu? Do they come from the outside water environment? Are they minei gavli? Do they come from the fish flesh itself? They are forbidden. Why? My time of why is that? So the Gemara says, Meinam nayim, this animal, be it the cow, be it the fish, may have been resting or sleeping peacefully. And the worm might have entered the animal from the nostrils, from the gills. Meaning, you're telling me that it could not have possibly come from the outside, because then it would have gone the way of the food waste that is excreted from the fish's system or from the animal system. No, it could have come from the outside, just not by way of the mouth. Maybe it entered the inner body cavity through the nostrils, through some other orifice of this animal or of the fish. And therefore, the fact that it hasn't been excreted from the fish's system, the animal system, is not proof it doesn't come from the outside. It may have come from the outside through some other opening, and that's why it's still forbidden. Because me'alma ka'asu, it comes from the outside, it's sheretz ha'aretz, it's sheretz ha'mayim, isur d'oraisa to eat it. This is the Gemara's conclusion with regard to kukiyani, that this kukiyani worm is forbidden because we assume it comes from the outside. Okay, this is step number 1 in the Gemara. So far, seems pretty convincing. Any worms in the fish are forbidden. That's our perception so far. Comes source number 5. And the Gemara now discusses another similar question. Not kukiyani, but darni. Darni also some form of worm. Notice the change in terminology from kukiyani to darni. That might be significant. Maybe not. Darni debisra, if you have worms in the flesh itself, says the Gemara, same page, chulin daf samach zayin amabez, asiri, these worms are forbidden to eat if they're found in the flesh themselves. However, says the Gemara, dekavri, that's only with regard to animal flesh. But dekavri, if you find a worm, a darni worm, in the fish flesh, shayon, that's permissible. So the Gemara now draws a distinction. Until now we said, kukiyani worm you find inside the cavity of the animal or of the fish is forbidden. Comes from the outside. Now the Gemara says that the darni worm found in the fish flesh is permissible. Now here Rashi explains, we're not talking about found in the inner body cavity, we're talking about worm found in the flesh of the fish itself. Until now we said kukiani is forbidden, we're talking about a fish that has a worm in the inner body cavity of the fish. Now when we're saying darni, dakavri, the darni worm found in the fish is permissible, we're talking about a worm found where? Not in the inner body cavity, but in the flesh itself, or between the flesh and the skin. Different location. And this is permissible. So much so, the Gemara says, Amalei Ravina li'ime, Ravina says to his mother, Ivla li va'ana echol. If you mix in this worm with the rest of the fish so that I don't see it, I'll eat it, no problem. Meaning, he didn't want to see what he was eating if there was a worm there because it wouldn't be so appetizing. Baltashaktsu, a little nauseating. But if I don't see it, not a problem. Then I can eat it. Halachically, totally kosher. Okay, now this is an important point in the Gemara because the Gemara now is drawing a distinction. Until now, we're discussing the kukiani worm that is forbidden to eat, whether it's found in the animal, whether it's found in the fish. That's forbidden. Why? Because that's talking about a worm that's found in the inner body cavity of the cow or of the fish, and we assume it must have come in from the outside. If it comes in from the outside, kukiani is forbidden. It's sheretz haaretz, it's sheretz hamayim. You can't eat it. Now we're discussing the darni worm, which Rashi explains, although I didn't quote the Rashi here on the source page, but Rashi says that the darni worm is found not in the inner body cavity of the fish or the cow, but it's found in the flesh of the fish itself, between the flesh and the skin. That, says the Gemara, is permissible. Why? So in the last line of that source number 5, the Gemara says, Vahani ki ka gavlon, that these worms found in the fish, when they grow, behetero kagavlan, they have always been growing beheter. They never became usser. Now the Gemara here, I didn't mean the whole phrase, but the Gemara draws a distinction, which is a bit of a tangential point for the purposes of our discussion, but the Gemara draws a distinction between worms found in the flesh of an animal and worms found in the flesh of a fish. What's the distinction? The Gemara says worms found in the flesh of an animal, when the animal was still alive, are forbidden on the basis of Eiver Menachai. You can't eat a live animal, you can't eat a piece of steak carved out of a live animal, that's Eiver Menachai. So too, the worm that's growing on a live animal's flesh is also forbidden because of Eiver Menachai. How does one allow the consumption of meat? What is Matir, the Isser of Eiver Menachai? Shechita, you shecht the animal, there was an Isser of Eiver Menachai, now that Isser of Eiver Menachai is permitted because there was a kasher Shechita. But what does Shechita serve to permit? The flesh of the animal itself. The worm that was on the flesh was not included in the heter of shechita. So the worm, the Gemara tells us, remains asamid in Eva Menachai. That's by worms found in the flesh of meat, of animal. But fish, there's no iser of Eva Menachai on fish because there's no requirement of shechita on fish. So if there's no requirement of shechita on fish, fish are permissible to eat by simply taking them out of the water. So the worm that grew in the flesh of the fish never was asr midin eva menachai. So when you pluck the fish out of the water, the worm is permissible along with the rest of the fish. It's a bit of a tangential point. I don't want to get into it at the moment. But just to point out that distinction that the Gemara makes here between worms found in the flesh of the animal are forbidden even after shechita, they remain asr midin eva menachai. Worms found in the flesh of the fish are permissible once you take the fish out of the water. You can consume the fish along with the worm in it. So for our purposes for today, what you see from this Gemara, after all is said and done, the Gemara in Chulin, Daf Samach Zayin on the Beis, is one very critical distinction. Kukiani worms found in the inner body cavity of the animal or of the fish are forbidden because may alma ka'asu, they come from the outside, and they're therefore forbidden based on the Isser of Sheretz Ha'aretz, if we're talking about an animal, based on the Isser of Sheretz Hamayim, if we're talking about a fish. The darni worm, which is found, I'm sorry, that's the Gemara's assumption. Is it based on a rov? It's a good question. I can't say for sure. I don't know. It seems from the Gemara that there is a possibility that it might enter through the digestion system, but there's also a possibility it can come from the other body orifices. So I'm not sure if the Gemara is saying that at the conclusion when you find worms inside the fish cavities, it for sure came from the gills and not through the digestion system, or else we've been excreted, you wouldn't see it. where the Gemara is saying both are possible and you have to be machmir for both possibilities. I'm not sure. It's a good question. Okay, but worms, kukiani worms found in the inner body cavity of fish or behemoths are forbidden. They come from the outside. Whereas the downy worm found in the flesh of the animal, if it's in an animal, it's forbidden because of Eivah Menachai. If it's in the flesh of a fish, it's permissible because it never became awesome. It didn't Eivah Menachai, and it grows from the fish itself. That's the Gemara. How do we paskin? So skip for a moment to source number 7. Source number 7, Shulchan Aruch and Yeradeh Siman Pei Dalet, tells us the following. Kol toloyim hadim tzom bebehema, any worms found in an animal, bein shehem bein or labasar, bein shehem bimeeha, whether they are found between the flesh and the hide of the animal, whether they're found in the inner body cavities of the animal, asurim are forbidden. However, when it comes to fish, says the Shulchan Aruch, v'hanim tzom bedogim, if they are found in fish, these worms are found in the fish, bimeeham, if it's found in the inner body cavity of the fish, in the guts of the fish, asurim, they're forbidden. Why? Like the Gemara said, me'al makasu, it came from the outside, it's sharet hamayim. However, says the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Pei Dalet, bein or lebasar o bisoch habasar, if you find the worms in the fish, in the flesh of the fish itself, or between the flesh and the skin of the fish, mutarim, they are permissible. They are totally permissible. That's the Psak Halacha and Shulchan Aruch. End of story. That's Shulchan Aruch, Siman Pei Dalet, Hilchos Taloim, Tzin Yerodei Echelek Aleph. Shulchan Aruch says across the board, worms found in the fish, in the flesh of the fish, are permissible to consume. Okay, so you would think, it's very clear in Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch doesn't say, but Anasaki is forbidden. He says, across the board, fish found to have worms in the flesh are permitted to be consumed, no questions asked. So where does the problem then begin? What is this whole tumult all about? So if you look in Rav Moshe Mordechai Karp's article in the Or Yisrael Journal, he points to about 4 different statements made by the Rishonim on this sugya, all which essentially state the same, very same point. I quoted one of those statements in source number 6, the Rashba on this sugya in Chulin. And this statement is echoed in other Rishonim as well, the Ram, the Ra'ah, for example. The Rashba on source number 6 says the following. In explaining the basis for the heter to consume worms found in the flesh of the fish, the Rashba writes, perish the Gemara means, why is darni permissible to eat when found in the flesh of the fish, not in the flesh of the animal? So the Rashba writes, toloim shenasim lala behema bein or labasa v'chein ledogim. Darni means worms that appear in the animal or in the fish between the flesh and the skin. Umishum hachi shebedogim sharu. This is why they're permissible when found in the flesh of the fish. And here's the key line. Dehanu, because these worms, vadai mine kagavli. Certainly. Vadai, that's the word of the day. Vadai mine kagavli. Without question, for sure, these worms grow from the flesh of the fish itself. Dilodami le kukiani. It's not like the kukiani worm, which are found in the me'e hadog, in the guts of the fish. Da'asi le me'amu, which comes from the outside. Amishum hachiasi, that's why they're forbidden. So what does Rashba tell us? He says, kukiani is forbidden because it comes from the outside. The darni worm found in the flesh of the fish is permissible. Why? Because vadai mine kagavli, without doubt, it grows from the fish itself. If you look in the Ran and the Ra'ah, they use the wording efsher. It's impossible that it came from the outside. That's the Ran, that's the Ra'ah. Impossible that this darni worm you find in the flesh of the fish came from the outside. Whereas Rashba says, it certainly comes from the fish itself, and that's why it's permissible. So Rav Karp makes a very, very cogent argument. The Rishonim, the Ram, the Ra'ah, the Rashba are clearly stating that the basis and the premise for the heter in the Shulchan Aruch to consume this worm found in the flesh of the fish is only because, without question, it is impossible it came from the outside. It definitely grew from the flesh of the fish itself. So they say, well, we know today that this Anasaki parasite does not grow from the flesh of the worm itself. It comes from the outside. How do we know that? Is it only because scientists, botanists tell us that? No, because Rabbi Shneur Zalman Revach, a respected Rav in Eretz Yisrael, has conducted experimentation and has found that when you take fresh fish out of the water, the longer you let them sit without gutting them, the more opportunity the parasite has to burrow its way from the guts of the fish into the flesh of the fish, what they refer to as migration. How does he know that? Because he has taken fresh fish from the water, he has gutted them at different intervals, you know, the day they took it out right away, a day later, 2 days later, for example, and he has found that the sooner he guts it, the less chance the worm has to migrate. The longer after he takes it out of the water, he guts it, the more chance it has to migrate. And he has shown that you see this parasite, this Nanasaki worm, gradually burrowing its way from the stomach into the flesh of the fish. He even gutted one fish and found that it was in the middle of burrowing from the stomach into the flesh of the fish. It was half sticking into the guts of the fish and half coming into the flesh of the fish. It was just making its way into the flesh of the fish. So he says, you see very clearly, there's a process here, a gradual process, that it slowly burrows its way from the guts of the fish into the flesh of the fish. So even if you take a fish that has been gutted and you find this parasite in the flesh of the fish, you know it came from the stomach. You know it came from the stomach. Then the basis for the heter is no longer relevant, according to these Rishonim, and hence you should forbid the consumption of this Anasaki parasite.
What worm does Rishon Zalman Revach think actually is mutar?
Great question. Hang on.
Does it exist in the world?
Good question. We're getting there. Hold on. Good question. That is the basis for this prohibition, for this iser. Now, the question then, as you just pointed out, is, so then what is included in the heter of the Shulchan Aruch? If you are telling me that the Anasaki worm is forbidden because you've proved that it slowly migrates from the stomach to the flesh of the fish, well, the Shulchan Aruch and the Gemara were matir something. What were they matir? What were they matir? So one suggestion made is, well, perhaps in times of the Shulchan Aruch, before the global fish market evolved, the way you caught your fish was you went down to the river, you fished your fish out, and you gutted it right then and there. Took it home, gutted it on your kitchen counter, and, fresh fish in the water, gutted 1, 2, 3, and there you had it. Not so long ago. I'm sure people who remember that as well, from home. Bought your fish in the fish market, you brought it home, and you gutted it on the kitchen counter. So the argument goes that perhaps back in the day when that was the way that fish were generally consumed, you took a fresh fish, you gutted it right away, these Anasaki worms never had time to migrate from the gut to the flesh. Today, with the global market, you get a fish somewhere in Scandinavia and it's shipped all the way down to the U.S. By the time that you've gotten around to gutting the fish and the time it's fished out of the water, there's a longer time that has elapsed. And maybe now there's more of a possibility that you'll find these Anasaki worms in the flesh of the fish. In other words, maybe today there's more problem of the fish with worms that have migrated from the stomach. Back in the days of Shulchan Aruch, didn't happen. They were gutted right away, and the worms never migrated from the stomach to the flesh of the fish. I don't know if all fish are flash frozen. Not sure. I don't know. It's a good question. Hold on one second. I'm sorry. Now, the problem is the following. The Shulchan Aruch never makes any distinctions between, the worms in the flesh are only permissible if you got it right away. Shulchan Aruch doesn't say, as we just saw, that it depends on how long you wait from fishing the fish till you got the fish. No such distinctions are being made. So it's very, very difficult to assume that the Shulchan Aruch was matir worms in the flesh because in his day, Anasaki worm didn't have time to migrate to the flesh of the fish. Today it does. That's a very unlikely probability. The strongest reason that one can put forth to argue in favor of allowing the consumption of these Anasaki worms is that the Shulchan Aruch says straight out, you can eat the worms found in the flesh of the fish. There's no problem. No distinctions are made between how long it's been since the fish has been fished before it's been gutted. Another suggestion made is, perhaps there are different types of worms. Maybe an Anasaki worm has always been forbidden, and the Shulchan Aruch was discussing other worms that grow from the flesh of the fish itself. We'll see this suggestion in a prominent halachic source shortly. But once again, no distinctions are drawn in the Shulchan Aruch between one kind of worm and another kind of worm. Now, the impression... Question? It's a good question that is discussed in some of the halachic literature that I quickly saw. What is your question based on? Why are you asking?
Well, the crop's experiment makes it seem like
only migrates after death.
Does it start to migrate? That's how he's preserving the...
Right, the assumption is it migrates only after death, not while the fish is alive.
Wikipedia looks like it migrates during the natural
cycle. It's a good question. I don't know enough about it to tell you with certainty. It's been discussed... in some of the literature that I came across, I didn't research that particular angle of it very, very, very thoroughly. But what the halacha in Shulchan Aruch seems to point to, and what the Gemara seems to point to, is what's known as spontaneous generation. It seems like the Gemara is permitting the consumption of these worms down the flesh of the fish because minei kagavli, because they are created and evolve from the flesh of the fish itself. Now, spontaneous generation was a theory that was accepted as a given for thousands of years. If you look in source, in between source 7 and 8, there's another Wikipedia here, print out for you. Spontaneous generation was a theory that believed that it was commonplace and everyday occurrence for life to originate from inanimate matter, meaning that life didn't necessarily originate from male-female reproduction, but it might have originated in some cases from inanimate matter. It was a theory that was advocated by Aristotle and many, many others, and ultimately disproven conclusively by the experiments of Louis Pasteur in the 1800s, who, if I'm not mistaken, showed that decaying meat does not produce worms from itself. The worms come from the outside. I think he took two pieces of meat. One was, I believe, contained in such a way that nothing could enter from the outside. One had an ear opening from the outside. Someone told me yesterday, a PhD in biology, my school told me that this experiment is still ongoing. One of the museums in Paris, you can find that piece of meat that he, in 1859 or something, locked in some vacuum-packed container, and they're still waiting to see if the maggots will jump out of it, I guess. I haven't confirmed that, but that was his experiment to prove that the spontaneous generation is not correct. So the question becomes the following. If, in fact, this halacha is based on this assumption of spontaneous generation, what happens now? What do you do now? If the halacha which permits the consumption of worms from the fish is based on this premise, if that is in fact the case, I'm not saying it is, but if it is in fact the case, what do you do now? And this question has been raised in other areas as well. One famous one, which was already raised back in the 1700s by Yitzchak Lampranti, who was an Italian rav, author of an encyclopedia called Pachad Yitzchak, he raises the following question. Source number 8, well-known Gemara Masechta Shabbos, Daf Kuf Zayin, where the Gemara says, there is a machlokas Rabbi Eliezer and the Rabbanon, as to whether one is liable on Shabbos for killing kina, for killing a louse. And Eliezer says, you kill lice on Shabbos, it's like you killed a camel. It's the same iser of shochet. Rav Yosef says, no, the Rabbanon disagree with Rabbi Eliezer by lice, that you don't violate the same iser of killing on Shabbos when you kill lice. De'eno para v'rava, because lice don't reproduce from male-female reproduction like other animals do, and the issur of killing Minat Torah, according to the Rabbanon, is limited to male-female reproduction that produces life. This is quoted in Halacha. If you look in source number 9, there's a Mishnah Berurah here, who tells us that Ramosim shehavayosan min haglalim umin haperos shehev ishu. Bugs that are produced from peros shehev ishu is decaying fruit. V'kayote behen, and similar kinds of sources of life. Kigon toloim shabasar, the maggots that appear in decaying flesh of an animal. On those types of bugs, says the Mishnah Berurah, if you kill them, there is no iser d'oraisa, might be asa midrabanan, but there's no iser d'oraisa. The iser d'oraisa, says the Mishnah Berurah, is only on ramasim shein parim v'ravim mizachar unikeva, only on insect life that comes from male-female reproduction. So Pachad Yitzchak Encyclopedia of Yitzchak Lampranti in 1700s in Italy says, today, We assume that these lice are produced from eggs that are laid by male female reproduction. So what happens to the halacha? Should one be machmir now not to kill lice because science now assumes that they are produced from male female reproduction? And his Rebbe disagreed with him. His Rebbe said, you can't change the halacha based on your new understanding of the science. Halacha was established that killing lice is not an issur d'oraisa, so that's the way it remains. Another often well-known, often quoted instance in halacha where the spontaneous generation comes into play is source number 10, a Mishnah Meseches Chulin. Mishnah Meseches Chulin in the ninth parak tells us, Achbar shechetzio basar vechetzio adama. If you have a mouse that is half flesh and half earth, hanoger bebasar tame. If you touch the flesh part of the mouse, you become tame. Ba'adama tahar. If you touch the as of yet unformed, still earthy part of the mouth, you remain tahar. Again, this Mishnah seems to be assuming the existence of a mouse that is half flesh, half earth, which seems to be based on the assumption that there's spontaneous generation, that life can be produced from inanimate matter such as soil, and that this mouse was caught somewhere in the middle of that creation process. And the Mishnah is discussing the halachos of this mouse with regard to Tumah V'Tahara. So the Teferes Yisrael, the commentary on the Mishnah from the 1850s, Rabbi Yisrael Lifshitz, writes here in source number 11, he says, Shamati apikorsim milaglegin abriyazu. I have heard apikorsim who are mocking this mention of this half-flesh, half-earth mouse. Umakchishim v'omrim, they contradict, they say, Ein b'metzias klal, doesn't exist. L'chein, therefore. So here he was faced with this apparently identical conflict between science and Torah. Spontaneous generation is assumed by the Mishnah and is denied by contemporary science. So what's his approach in response? He says, therefore I've seen fit lahazkir kan to quote here Masha Matzosi Kosov Besefer Ashkenazi, what I have found in a German book, Shechiber Chacham Echad Mefursam B'Chachmei HaUmos, authored by a very famous, well-known German scholar, Ushmo Link. His name is Link. Sound familiar? No. Okay. His name is Link. Besifro Hanikra Urvelt, in his book entitled Urvelt, Chelek Aleph, page 327. He writes there, Shenimtza Beria Kazos Be'eretz Mitzrayim, such a creature exists in Egypt, B'mechos Tabeis, Thebes, okay, a certain district in Egypt. The Nikres Ha'achbarahi B'loshem Mitzrayim, and it's referred to as Dipus Jaculus. U'b'loshem Ashkenaz, in German, it's called spring mouse. Asher ha'chelek shalafaneha rosh v'chazav yadeha, the first section, the front section of the mouse, is mitu'arm yof, is fully formed. V'achoreha, the hind section of the mouse, is a dain gulamim b'rig be'ar, it's a still clod of earth. Ad achar ezi yamim, until a few days pass, and then it becomes totally flesh. And so Tiferes Yisrael quotes this passage from the German scholar Link in his book Urvelt to back up the existence of this mouse found in the Mishnah Chulin. So I recall a few years ago reading a fascinating article by Dr. Shneur Lyman. I just last week emailed, some of you may know, about Menachem Butler, who told me where to find it. It is free download available on LymanLibrary.com. And he wrote an article on this passage of the Teferes Yisrael. And true to form, Dr. Lyman succeeded in tracking down the first edition of Link's book, Urvelt, on loan from the Princeton Library. He found it there. And apparently this book is written by Heinrich Friedrich Link, who died in 1850, distinguished German botanist. He was a professor of pharmaceutics in Berlin, director of the Botanical Gardens there. And his book is entitled, in translation, The Primeval World and Antiquity Elucidated by Natural History. And this passage that Teferes Yisrael quotes is, in fact, a passage that Heinrich Link himself quotes from a first century BCE Greek historian named Diodorus Siculus. And he, this Greek historian, writes that the Egyptians have an account like this. The Egyptian account is that life came into being in Egypt, and as proof that animal life appeared first of all in their land, they would offer the fact that even at the present day meaning first century BCE, right, even at the, well, he's actually quoting Egyptians, maybe referring to even an older present day, but even at present day, at certain times, the soil generates mice in such numbers and as of such size to astonish all who have witnessed the phenomenon. Some are fully formed as far as the breast and front feet are concerned and are able to move, while the rest of the body is unformed, the clod of earth still retaining its natural character, so on and so forth. Oh, okay. So, Dr. Lyman writes that this account of this Greek historian, Diodorus, is an account that is found in other places in Greek-Roman literature, and he quotes the numerous sources from that time that offer such accounts as well. And Dr. Lyman says very simply, if this was something that all the scholars were quoting at that time as fact, so Chazal simply were saying, okay, if this is what the scholars are saying exists, how would Halacha treat such a creature? And so the Mishnah Chulin says, well, if you're telling me such a creature exists, here's the Halacha, Tumah v'Tahara. The front half would be Tameh, second half would be Tahar. What he's essentially suggesting is that Chazal were simply taking the advanced current scientific theory of their time and saying, how would Halacha deal with such an existence of such a creature? Here's how we would deal with it. That's how he very simply understands the reference here in Chazal to such a creature. Now, the fact that the Tiferes Yisrael quotes that this is called in German spring mouse, Dr. Lyman says, is because Link, Heinrich Friedrich Link, has a footnote on that page 327 in which he says that the spring mouse, Dipus jaculus, which is in Upper Egypt, has very short forelegs, doubtlessly could lead one to conclude that it's not yet a fully developed creature. Meaning, this Link was simply trying to explain how the ancient Greek and Egyptian historians might have mistakenly thought that this mouse evolved from the soil because it has very short forelegs and therefore it might have looked like it was not yet fully developed. So apparently, says Dr. Lyman, the Tiferes Yisrael might have misunderstood the quote that he saw in this Link book, Ervelt, and he suggests that what really happened is that Link was simply quoting earlier sources from antiquity who were explaining the current scientific theory of the day. Now, this all has relevance for our issue at hand as well, because if our issue is one of a halacha where the worms are permissible on the basis of the assumption of spontaneous generation, how does halacha now deal with that? So, one approach is to say the following. One could argue, with regard to our worms and the fish, that even if you can prove that the Anasaki worm comes from the outside, Chazal were talking about a different kind of worm, not that worm. And perhaps the worm that Chazal were talking about, we have not yet proven comes from the outside. So for example, in Chas and Tshuva Shevet HaLevi, source number 12, this is a tshuva, incidentally, with regard to sable, black cod. And this was a tshuva that was published in 1980, which means that this issue was already discussed in the late 70s. This is not a new issue. This is something that's been around and been rehashed numerous times for the past 30 years. Why it's made such inroads today, I'm not quite sure. Rav Shmuel Vosner, who is one of the post-Kimtzei Eretz Yisrael who signed on the Isser of the Anasaki worm, so he already dealt with this issue 30 years ago. So he writes, he says, I think, let's quickly paraphrase what he says, I think that the Chazal who knew the secrets of Teva Elokim, they, as we noted earlier in the Gemara, spoke only of Kukiani being forbidden and Darni being permissible. So he suggests that perhaps Dafka Darni, that's a specific type of worm that's permissible. That Chazal said is permissible. But worms that you can prove, like Anasaki, come from the outside, Chazal never addressed that. That might be forbidden. And even the Shulchan Aruch, he says, is perhaps saying that worms that you don't know where they come from, you can assume come from the flesh of the fish and are permissible. But if you can prove that a worm like Anisaka comes from the outside, even the Shulchan Aruch would prohibit it. So Avvasan takes the approach that your scientific proofs that Anisaka come from the outside, you're right. Either Shulchan Aruch, the Gemara say that worms found in the flesh of the fish are permissible. That's Dafka Darni, Dafka specific type of worm. That's permissible, not the Anisaki. Any worm you can prove comes from the outside, it's forbidden.
But we can prove all worms come from
the outside. Very good. Exactly the next point. So Rabbi Yisrael Belsky, Shlita of the Oyus Posek, one of the Oyus Poskim, quotes the following source from the Rishonim, source number 13, Hagol Sashri, right there on the same sugya. The Hagol Sashri, one of the Rishonim writes, Aval tola'im bikavri, worms in fish. Butter hulano, we are certain, diminok hagavri, they come from the fish itself. Ulekachshar, therefore they're permissible. Hilkoch, therefore, tola'im shenim tzu gufadog, worms found in the flesh of the fish itself, shoru are permissible. Hagol Sashri makes no mention of darni specifically. He says, tola'im, all worms we know come from the flesh of the fish itself, and they're permissible. So don't tell me, Rav Belsky argues that no, only Darni comes from the flesh and all the other ones like Anisaki come from the outside and those are forbidden, whereas Darni is permissible. The Rishonim themselves say all Tolaim come from the flesh of the fish itself and they're all permissible. So you're back to square one. We have this apparent contradiction between the spontaneous generation theory and science of today. So how do you deal with that? And this, as some of you might recall, was one of the issues which Nelson Slifkin was criticized for a number of years ago. In the bans that were assigned against him by a number of the leading Gedolim in Eretz Yisrael and in America as well, not all of them mention what issue they're taking. They were upset about. One mentions, Rav Shlomo Miller signed a letter stating he was opposed to his characterization of Sheish Smei Bereishis. That was the issue he was objecting to. Other Gedolim who signed letters were a little less specific as to what issue they were objecting to. So it's hard to know if this was one of the ones that they were very upset about. But on his own website, he mentioned that this was one issue he was criticized for, this issue of spontaneous generation. So how do we deal with it here in this context of halacha here? So Shevet Levi takes the approach that Chazal were talking about one type of worm only, and that's permissible, but any worm you can prove comes from the outside is forbidden. Rav Belsky argues very cogently that anyone who is baki b'chochmas hateva, b'darkei hateva, anybody who is knowledgeable in how science works, knows that there is no such thing as a worm that comes from the flesh of the fish itself. All worms come, like the Anisaki worm does, from the outside. So he says, you can't tell me that Anisaki is forbidden and only Dani is permissible. There's no such thing. Once you accept that the halacha and the gemara's psak, which we do, that the worms found in the flesh of the fish itself is permitted, then you can start proving on the basis of science that, well, this worm comes from the outside, it's not included in the heter. Because there's no such distinction. All worms, he says, have the same life cycle as Anisaki worm does. All parasites come to the fish flesh the same way that Anisaki worm does. And bottom line is, the halacha paskins, it's permissible. It's permissible. Science's discoveries today are not going to change that. So that is definitely one approach. That is the approach taken by a number of very distinguished poskim. Dr. Lyman in this article quotes Rabban Avraham ben Rambam, a famous passage, who writes that I'll find the exact quote here in Hebrew. Rabban Avraham ben Rambam writes that we're not obligated to accept the sayings of Chazal with regard to refuah and chochmas hateva the same way we accept and believe everything they say with regard to perush haTorah. Now this is not something new. You look in Tosfos in a number of places in Shas writes that even though you find in the Gemara that animals don't give birth before 3 years, Tosfos says nishtana hadavar, it's changed today. Today animals do reproduce, a behemoth can have an offspring before 3 years of age. And in other areas as well, we find that Tosfos, with regard to refuos of the Shas, the medicinal recommendations in the Gemara, Tosfos says, Nishtana hadavar, it's changed from what it used to be. Meaning Tosfos is acknowledging that our science today does not jive with the science of then in certain instances. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, quoted by Rav Nevensohn, said that with regard to the killing of the lice issue, which again is a spontaneous generation question, Shlomo Zalman said very simply, Chazal based the halacha on what you can see visibly with the eye. The lice do not visibly reproduce based on male-female reproduction, and therefore Chazal said it's not something which reproduces like other forms of life, and therefore you can kill it on Shabbos, min ha-Torah. He says Chazal based their halacha decisions on what you can see visibly, not what you can now determine is really the truth because of microscopic examination.
Does that mean you can drink the water in
there? So the concern there is that the water contains copepods that are visible, if you know what you're looking for. That's the concern there. Now, Rav Belsky's master that too. That's a separate shear. But that particular taina might not be a valid one. Dr. Lyman quotes Rav Shamshon Fol Hirsch, who says the very same thing. Rav Hirsch writes that based on the same point as Menachem Ben Rambam, he says in this regard as well. So the truth is, if you look, you know, there are those that would prefer to argue that perhaps the science that has been quoted with regard to Anasaki worm is itself faulty. That maybe the scientific research about the Anasaki worm migrating from the stomach to the flesh of the fish is itself faulty research and hasn't been proven and documented sufficiently. That's a claim made by one Rav in Eretz Yisrael today, which you can find online if you're interested. Rav Belsky, very understandably, rejects that approach and says, no, even though we know that the Anasaki parasite and all other parasites found in the flesh of the fish migrate from the outside to the inside, doesn't matter. The halacha is clearly paskin, Shulchan Aruch, Gemara, that worms found in the flesh of the fish are permissible. And the fact that you can prove today that, well, it came and migrated from the outside is not going to change that. And he even goes so far as to say, it doesn't matter what size the parasite was when it entered into the fish's body from the outside. He's not limiting his heter to only Anasaki parasites that entered the fish as microscopic larvae and then grew in the flesh of the fish itself. Because once again, Shulchan Aruch doesn't say you can only eat it if it came into the fish when it was microscopic. How are you supposed to know that? He says that apparently the heter is based on the very simple assumption that minaka gavli means it grew to a halachically significant proportion in the fish itself, and the fact that it entered when it was a smaller size is halachically all I need to know, and it's still going to be permissible. There's a source number 14 here. I excerpted a quote from Rabbi Chaim Goldberg, the OU's fish RC, quoting Rav Belsky, who says very clearly that he feels that the svara of mine gavli means the parasite grows in the fish, becomes permitted as part of the fish, regardless of its original size when it entered the fish or migrated from the guts of the fish into the flesh of the fish itself. A similar svara is found here in source number 15, Rabbi Cheskel Roth, very prominent posek in Brooklyn, Carlsberg Odayan. He wrote a tshuva on this issue back in 1997. As I said before, this was an issue that's been around 30 years ago, 1980, 1997, and now 2010, it's making the rounds. Just, once again, it's being discussed on the table. I'm sorry? Good question. I can't give anyone credit for that. I don't know who the one is.
Maybe it's the internet that causes this.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what brought it to the fore again. Rav Belsky himself notes that some of the Gedolim of today who asser this worm in the fish were the ones who permitted it 30 years ago or so. So he suggests that they might have been given inaccurate information this time around, which is an interesting thought. I don't know who he's referring to and what misinformation he is concerned that they might have been fed. Okay, I don't want to get into other issues of controversy. I think one's enough for this morning. But I just want to quote of Emek HaTshuva, of Cheskel Roth's Tshuva here. Cheskel Roth's Tshuva here, that he says as follows. He says that, number one, when science contradicts Chazal, we follow Chazal. That's his first opinion, first statement here. Follow Chazal and Halacha, no question about it whatsoever. And secondly, he says, this is what we were talking about, Belsky, that the fact that it grew inside the fish itself is all we need to know for the halacha to be matirit. Even when it entered from the outside, But that, according to Chazal's understanding and definition of it, is Ephes Va'ayin, is not significant. Ikur G'day Lasso, Mineu Behu, the main growth of this fish, of this worm, this parasite, was in the flesh of the fish itself, and therefore it is not problematic. Rabelsky writes that Rav Moshe was asked this Shaila back in his day, and he said it's permissible, and he even refused to write a tshuva on it because it's a fair shalach and shulchan aruch. So why should I write a tshuva on what's so explicit in shulchan aruch? So Rabelsky feels very, very strongly, as I guess you've gathered already, that this parasite in the worm is permissible. Other Gedolei HaPoskim are much more hesitant, cautious, machmir. Mention of Heinemann and Shlomo Miller, who are taking a much more stringent approach. And in addition to the Gedolei Eretz Yisrael, many of whom signed on this Isser as well. So it's still an issue that is developing and evolving as time goes on. I don't think Rav Heinemann has come out yet with an official tshuva on the issue, or even with the inspection procedures for the Star K establishments, but I think that's due to come out shortly. I think of Miller as well in Toronto is due to publish his tshuva shortly. So it's just a fascinating, I guess, illustration of how poskim react to such an instance where halacha and science seem to contradict one another, and how to go about that. Yeah. Yeah, so I think that's what the Karlsberger Rav is suggesting in his second half of that statement I just read there, that you don't have to assume that it means spontaneous generation. You can assume that it means that it was an insignificant halachic size when it entered the fish. It became halachically significant from the fish itself. Right. That's what Rav Roth writes, that you don't have to assume it means spontaneous generation. You could reconcile the two. Right, I think that's what he's saying. He's saying that the fact that it became larger to significant size than the fish itself is enough to permit it, and you don't have to worry about the source of it. Yeah.
I'm in the supermarket.
I'll give you an example. Right. So if you follow the machmirim, then you'd have to consult the fish list of the fish that are potentially infected with this parasite, and you'd have to. So Rav Belsky argues that canned fish, even if you're machmir, would not be a problem. He argues that for various reasons, bittul, and for reasons of metzias, it's not an issue. But machmirim would say that if the fish that you want to buy is of the prohibited fish list, you would have to either not eat it altogether or know how to check it first. They write that with a white flesh fish, you shine a very bright light on it to see if it has any worms in it. With a salmon, pink flesh fish, you shine an ultraviolet light on it, see if it has any worms on it. You have to check it carefully to see if it has any parasites in it. So depending on which sock you follow.
What about if you mesh it up? If it's all meshed up, whatever it is.
I think Rav Miller in Toronto is working with